Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. If you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150.
All right, on to the next subject. If we can back out now. Now we're back to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. Again, we look up in the upper right-hand corner and we see the log in and register. That reminds you to pick yourself up a online account and access a subscription to Your Remedies in the Law. Also, very affordably priced at just $10 a month. Of course, you could do that automatic through your PayPal or credit card, whatever you like. That gives you full, again, untethered access to Your Remedies in the Law, all the different features there. We've got e-books. For example, as well as many other cool features there. And, of course, you get the phone number and the PIN for every call. That also gets you a virtually unlimited access during the questions and answers portion to our various information providers, whoever's speaking that evening. And, of course, every call is recorded, so you have years of archives as well, a vast wealth of knowledge and experience for these various calls. All this and much more available to you. If this is not an option for you just yet, though, or maybe your budget doesn't allow, we do have Freedoms Radio, www.freedomsradio.com, where every evening the calls are broadcasted live, completely free of charge, 100% free. There's never a charge to use Freedoms Radio. There's even a question bar where you can type in a question or a comment. Click submit. We read those out over the air. So even still, you get some limited interaction with the information providers. And, of course, you never have to miss a call again. You don't wish. All right, next up here, most of you probably noticed on virtually every website that we have that map the United States. That is a private communications platform designed to put the power of communication and the power of education back in the hands of the common man. Also, 100% free to use, never any charge to use. GrassFire Communications, that's what it's called, GrassFire Communications, formerly Statewide Communications. How it works, essentially, is you've got a very easy-to-use setup, install wizard, you know, put your name in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then at some point in the middle, it's going to have you choose from a list of topics, a very thorough list of topics, ranging anything from status change to home foreclosure prevention, IRS matters, credit card matters, health rights, veterans' rights, traffic, on and on. If you can think of it, you'll find it in that list. And of course, you can choose multiple items, choose many items as you like. And then as you wrap it up towards the end there, it's going to have you, of course, choose a radius. So we're looking for citywide, countywide, statewide, and the former name, statewide communication, or something custom somewhere in the middle there. And so when it's all said and done, it's going to put it all together, kind of how most would probably refer to as a social media. But nothing like a social media. It's very custom, very private. But how most folks would probably describe a social media. It's going to put you in contact with people right there in your local area. The idea is you sit down there one evening and say, well, this happened to me today. The first half a dozen people come in and say, well, I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. That's what's wrong with this country. On and on. Now, of course, those are probably all truthful statements, but I don't know how well that's going to assist you in your education. Maybe the next person after that comes in and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do if I was similarly situated. I'd go down to my local county courthouse. By the way, if you didn't know, every county's got a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library, free of the taxpayer. And I'd look up these terms and definitions, and just that right there alone will give you a real good idea of what you're going to be looking at. And then after that was said and done, I'd go to YouTube and I'd watch this YouTube video. Well, now we're starting to get somewhere. Now we're starting to educate ourselves. We're starting to learn how to do our own due diligence. Maybe a few more people come in and say, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And also, I agree with these other folks. They shouldn't be able to do that. Okay, that's good. Okay. Then somebody else somewhere down the line comes in and says, I tell you what else I would do if I was similarly situated. I'd go to this particular website, maybe remediesofthelaw.com, and I'd purchase this particular educational process. Well, you see where I'm going with this, folks. And so that's the point of GrassFire Communications. Put the power of communication, power of education back in the hands of the common man. Once you've done so, and now you've learned how to do your own due diligence and handle your own affairs, your own matters, well, I don't have to tell most of you that there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to get folks to do here with GrassFire, is just start talking again, learn how to educate themselves. All right, also, you might have noticed every time you visit your remedy, you're met with that little blue box that pops up, asking if you want to continue on or stay. The reason we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. Too often we hear, oh, I wish I'd known about this, or I wish I'd heard about that before things got out of hand for me, or whatever the situation might be. And so we put that up there hoping that folks would explore. Your remedy has grown quite a bit in size over the last 3 to 5 years. A lot of new information providers on a lot of new topics. Of course, most of the information there, educational processes from previous information providers are still able to be found there as well. And then your remedies in the law with everything that it now holds is just one of a dozen and a half, 2 dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So odds are for most of you, probably quite a bit that you have missed or haven't seen yet. And so we put that there for folks to, at your leisure, take a look around and see what else is available there to you. If you have a question, ever on if we have an information provider that could assist you with your particular situation, or if we have an educational process that would line up well with your particular situation, you're always welcome to reach out to us. Email me directly, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. You can call us on the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250. Somebody asked me to worry the time. We'll be back with you very, very quickly. All right. Winding down here, this next portion we call your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. When you come aboard with an information provider here at Your Remedies in the Law, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with that information provider. Now, these information providers pay for advertising at Your Remedy. This would be a cost to that information provider along with any other costs associated with your particular educational process or whatever it might be that you're doing there. This brings us to an even more specific question, more specific point. What is the credit policy or the refund policy like at Your Remedies in the Law? Well, there is none. Again, you know, things like e-books, whatnot, those are all, you know, all sales final. And then, you know, the, if there was going to be a question of a credit or a refund with an information provider, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider, having nothing really to do with the remedy. And then even then, folks, I can tell you it's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. Again, as always, you are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any information provider's time or any particular educational process. All right, lastly, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conference calls are guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's perfectly fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always keep it civil. Besides, if the question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. I don't see that we have any new callers this evening, so no need to do any housekeeping on that. So at this point, we just turn the call over to our speaker. Now, I don't see where Mr. Sutton has joined us just yet. And, of course, Mr. Edward is handling some particular matters right now, so I'm kind of left alone here at the helm. So just bear with me here, folks.
Now, Martin, oh. Who's the speaker for this evening?
Is this, forgive me. Oh, my goodness. I heard your voice, and it completely, yep, absolutely. My apologies, folks. I was one day ahead on this week. Our speaker for this evening actually is Brother John, and I hear that he has joined us. And so I'm going to go ahead at this time and turn the call over to Brother John.
Hey, good evening. Thank you, Martin, for your kind and gracious introduction.
Yes, sir.
Tonight's topic is, hang on just one. Okay, thank you for your patience. I had a little bit of housekeeping myself to care for here. I've been out of pocket for a week, and I appreciate everybody's patience. Tonight's topic is on show cause and the power of show cause, and we're going to continue on with the saga of Mr. T as the stomach turns. So right now we'll start out with show cause. And to that end, when we're sometimes there are not just other parties, but judges and prosecutors that may choose to do something or say something that's that is or isn't correct, and if they've already ruled on or against a motion that you've made or a question you've asked. Sometimes it's best to do what's called a show cause motion. And the show cause is basically it's a request for or a demand requiring that a party or a judge justify or explain themselves and or why the court should not grant the motion for relief or whatever you're seeking. And usually a show cause order is usually issued by the judge when the other party fails to perform. And what happens is that in the simplicity of itself is a demand. If somebody says, well, this is what the I'm back in pocket now. And so I'm booting my laptop right now as we speak. And I was going to pull up a motion here. And it says, well, while it's booting, I'll just quote it from memory. But in this particular case, the show cause motion was that the prosecutor show when and where the state of Arizona acquired the right to usurp the Constitution and the inalienable rights that to deprive this individual of their right to keep and bear a firearm. Or in this, okay, is booting right now. This one, okay, this one was for the city or the county, San Diego County, and it was the show cause motion was for the sheriff to prove when and where the county of San Diego and the state of California had the right to deprive somebody of their right to keep and bear a firearm because they had been convicted of a crime to show when and where they received the authority to usurp or override the Constitution when the court section or Article 3 section or Section 1 that gives the court the authority to hear a case is parallel to the Second Amendment and the Second Amendment is not subordinate to or under the authority or the jurisdiction of the court. So what's happening is that in that particular case, the sheriff that was temporarily enforcing this order to motion by the California State Assembly that anybody that's been convicted of a Class D misdemeanor or more serious offense does no longer have the right to keep their firearm. And there was a case in Tyler, Texas, where a 15-year-old was arrested, sequestered by CPS, Child Protective Services, for driving a pickup that had a shotgun in the racked in the back window, and it was on private property. And the show cause order was that they show when and where this individual was deprived of his inalienable rights to keep and bear a firearm. And CPS claimed it's under 18, but in the show cause order, we just demanded where in the Constitution does it show that those inalienable rights are alienated until they reach 18. One of the three CPS agents was eventually given a 3-day vacation at Club Fed by the judge when the judge realized the seriousness of the matter and the fact that there is no 18 age drug keep and bear a firearm. When I was 7 and 8 and I used to go work on the farm in North Dakota, in the back of this 2-room schoolhouse it was quite the rage when they added on the second room so that everybody from the 12-year-olds up, everybody from the 8th grade all the way up to the 12th grade was in a separate room now. But in the back room where everybody put their goulashes and rain boots and rain clothes and their jackets was a gun rack. And there was a, along with the hat tree, there was a pistol tree. And you hung your pistol up on that, you know, and your guns when you, and there were more guns and pistols in the primary grades, as it was called back then, not the secondary. And there were kids that were 5 and 6 and 7 years old. They had 410 shotguns, and they used to go hunting rabbit on the way home from school and help bring home groceries. And this is up in North Dakota. This is back in the 60s. It had been going on since the 40s. But the racks that hold the guns were built in the 40s to accommodate the youngsters bringing their own firearms to school. And when the judge was shared that specific story, he remembered bringing a shotgun to school when he was 12, and because he went hunting duck after school. And the thing is that there is no place in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights or the Declaration of Independence that states that those inalienable rights are alienated because a person has committed a crime and or been convicted. What happens if the person was convicted of the crime and then, you know, turned over, was remanded for custody, turned over a new leaf, paid his debt to society, and now is a fine, solid, upstanding citizen? The people that make pass those laws that just because somebody's committed a crime, they're no longer. So we're taking a potential person that has turned over a new leaf, and instead of rewarding them, we're actually smacking them down. Would that person be considered a good element in society or an evil element in society? And that's the question you have to ask yourself. And the thing is that just because somebody has committed a crime, I'm sorry, but I have to stay focused straight ahead and identify with the fact that that has nothing to do with their inalienable rights. Their inalienable rights are inalienable. And whether it's because they're too young or they're too old or the VA says, well, this person's incompetent or they can't possess a firearm anymore, and the VA sends out somebody to go retrieve all of their firearms that this individual has, or sends it to the local district attorney who takes it to the judge and gets an order to seize all of their firearms, let's ask ourselves a question. Is that order constitutional? You know, and one might, and the first question that comes to mind is, where in the Constitution does it say just because the VA hospital rules somebody incompetent that they are no longer allowed to keep and bear a firearm? And they may, you know, they may have some incapacity. That doesn't mean that has no bearing on whether they may use or not use a firearm in an illegal manner. Quite the opposite, because all their training is in for the positive, for using it for the right reasons. They, at this juncture, we may be creating a situation where we're causing ourselves harm. But those arguments, can we even listen to those arguments? No, I can't. Because the Constitution is very clear. An individual has a unconditional right to keep and bear a firearm. It gets even more pronounced when we say, some people say, well, this is the state law or the city law or the local law, and that law was tested at the Supreme Court level. and you go, ouch, test at the Supreme Court. Does the Supreme Court have the authority to override the Constitution? Can it say that something is wrong when it's right? Can it say that it's black when it's actually white? The Supreme Court cannot. And that's a violation of its oath of office, because its oath is not to uphold the Supreme Court decisions. The oath of office that's demanded of Article 3 of the Constitution, that and is very, very clear that they must have an oath to support and uphold the Constitution. And so at that juncture, if they violated that oath, it begs the question, if they violated that oath, does their capacity to execute their amenities and authority and office, when does it fail, and when is it when are they no longer allowed to exercise the any of those authorities or amenities or privileges? The issue is that when they're doing that, for Article 6, you have to ask yourself, when it says Article 6, Paragraph 3 of the Constitution, it says, the senators and representatives before mentioned and all the members of the several state legislators and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states. Wait a minute. Both the United States and of the several states. There are two governments there that it's talking about. And for those of you who like to quote Mr. Edwards, you're well stated and founded in doing so when he brings up the issue about more than one government here, because it clearly states both the United States and of the several states. And this is just one of many places in the Constitution where it identifies that there is a difference between the Monday night call and the Tuesday night. American national and a corporate citizen. And American national is clearly of the several states, and the corporation is of the United States. But it says, the senators and representatives before mentioned, the members of the several state legislators and all the executives of the judicial officers, both of the United States and the several states, shall be bound by an oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. And if they violate that oath, it doesn't mean that at the end of a court, did it say at the end of a court trial that lasts 7 years long and goes up to the appellate and up to the Supreme Court, they had a criminal trial for violating their oath of office? It doesn't say anything about that. As long as that oath is intact, their authority to, the authority to exercise the oath, privileges, and authority of office evaporated the moment they broke that oath. And that subsequently means that everything that they did or decided after that is all null and void. Just a moment, I'm going to get something to drink. So it's very – I don't see anywhere in the Constitution where it allows an individual to continue exercising the authority after they violated their oath of office, okay? And the thing is very, very critical that we also need to understand is that in Article 3, Section 1, it says the judges both of the Supreme and the inferior courts shall hold their offices during good behavior. Meaning if they're breaking the rules, they're not allowed to exercise that. Now, does that mean that they broke the rules and nobody has charged them yet and it hasn't gone up through the court system so that their good buddies can overrule it and say it was a frivolous complaint and dismiss it without the findings of fact or conclusions of law? No, this is a this is something that when they commit that crime, we have to remember that the Declaration of Independence was, we hold these truths to be self-evident, comma, that, and I'm quoting this right now, that all men are created equal, comma, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, comma, and among these are the life, our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, dash, that to secure these rights, comma, governments are instituted among men, comma, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So what's happening is that those judges are the hired help. And if they commit a felony, even though it's from the bench, are they, is it right to, just because somebody is holding office, to not prosecute them for the felony that they're just in the process of committing? And what happens if somebody's placing them under arrest and they resist arrest? You know, how is that handled? And especially if it's somebody like an elderly woman that's walking with a cane and she has to place a judge under arrest. And the only reason why sheriff has the authority to make an arrest is because the people, whoever's the sheriff, went out and applied for a job. And he applied with the county clerk. The county clerk works for the people. And this sheriff, most county clerks, most people say that, well, we'd like the letters of reference. And they go out and they get a 1,000 signatures or 10,000 signatures saying that we affirm that this person is a good character. We're going to, we'd like to consider him for this job. He submits those references in the form of signatures to the county clerk. They are published for the people. And then on November 8th, usually, for the primary and the intermediary elections, they all of the employers meet together and decide which new employee they are going to hire. The only reason why that sheriff has the authority to make an arrest is because the people convey their people's capacity for citizen's arrest. The people's capacity for citizen's arrest is the highest authority and form of arrest. Not even the president's detail, the Secret Service, any of those exceed the people's authority to make a citizen's arrest. And those rights that the citizens have, those inalienable rights, were never, ever, ever surrendered or abdicated to the hired help. So what that means is that the judge, if he's resisting arrest, if any other kind of suspected felon is resisting arrest, what does an officer usually do, somebody who's been ordered to arrest them? Do they, and if that individual represents, or if the individual represents a threat to their person, what do they use? What does the person making the arrest usually do? Although you're on mute, I think I can hear a lot of you already answering the question. They shoot them. And if it's a one-shot deal and it goes right through the temple of the forehead, there is no trial. That person was convicted right there. And if it's bought up that they were that they were a suspected felon and that they were resisting arrest. And if it's a little old lady that's I was going to say the old lady, but if she's 63 years old and walking with a cane and she just shoots the judge or even the sheriff who's breaking the rules, or the state representative or the U.S. senator who just passed that gun control legislation, and that little lady has a copy of that signature on there, that's de facto evidence that they committed a felony under 18 U.S.C. 242, isn't it? So how would you handle it in that situation? Those are the questions to ask yourself. Restoring liberty is a function of the fact that the employers do not let the employees get away with anything that they're not supposed to. Your employees will get away with whatever you will let them. A business owner walked out on the factory floor and found five individuals, four of them smoking cigarettes and all of them drinking coffee behind a large machine, and asked them, "Why aren't you guys working?" One of them put down his cup of coffee and says, "Well, we didn't know you were watching." Oops. People have a nasty habit of trying to get away with whatever they can get away with. It's a natural habit, and when we don't do what we're supposed to do when we're called to, we are contributing to the delinquency of an adult, i.e. our employees, so those that we have hired, and that on election day we chose to hire them for 2 years or 4 years or 6 years or however many years that particular job posting had on us. But the issue is that we are the ones that get it. We're the ones that screwed up. We're the ones that we don't, you know, if all of a sudden, you know, if we don't, you know, some people say, "Well, John, I just don't vote." I understand why. Some of their arguments are such that they, because of the corruption, they don't want to have anything to do with it. Well, quite the opposite. Because of the corruption, that's why I have everything to do with it. This November 8th, I'm working as something called a poll watcher. Many of you are familiar with what a poll watcher is. Some of you don't live in states that they call them election inspectors or other things. But in Texas, a poll watcher, if somebody's going to go to jail for election fraud, it's the poll watcher that's going to do it. The poll watcher is the fuzz. And the poll watcher actually has higher authority than the local sheriff on the election day. At least they're given it. And if they decide to place somebody under arrest, they call up the county attorney and here in Harris County, I have the county attorney's number on speed dial on my phone. Well, actually, on the new phone, it's not yet on there. I haven't worked in an election yet since the new phone. But I used to be a precinct chairman and election judge for many, many years, and now I still do ad hoc election judge when necessary. And my 29-year-old son has been working at the polls with me since he was 4 years old. And some of you know what an SOR is, a statement of residency. It's a form that when somebody's name and address does not show up on the clerk's records, that they have to make a sworn statement that they are within that precinct, et cetera, and that they are legally, lawfully allowed to vote in that. And if, my son, bless his heart, when he was 4 years old, he was running back and forth those little SORs and everything else at my precinct where I was an election judge. And of all things, when it comes to the Republican state convention, and I normally don't use the political affiliation, because, some people say, well, John, you're affiliating yourself with a particular, party. And as much as possible, I am a nonpartisan, political, when it comes to political activism, I'm nonpartisan. Not bipartisan, I'm nonpartisan. And, there are times if you walk into the precinct where I was working as an election judge or a poll watcher, et cetera, and somebody says, well, John, how would you vote, or this or that? You know, I would have, and here's exactly what, and you would have heard me say those exact words. Well, if you'd have asked me that at 6:59 this morning, I would have had an opinion. But from 7 o'clock now to 6:59 p.m. tonight, I am a bound, duly sworn, nonpartisan servant whose sole purpose is to let you hear your voice heard in the, through the ballot. And whether that's something I agree with 100% or whether it's something that I would spend a lifetime campaigning against, it's my duly sworn position to set up the soapbox and let you stand on it in the center of the park and rant and rave at the top of your voice and advocate that which I would spend a lifetime fighting. Because right now my job is, no matter whether I agree with how you vote or not, is to make certain that your voice is heard. And I have said those, actually, and sometimes I have to use those exact words many, many times to the end of the day till I'm hoarse, practically. And either as a precinct chair or as an election judge, but as a poll watcher, because I'm the fuzz, I'm not allowed to talk to the voters. Only the staff at the poll. And so if somebody's getting ready to go to jail, the staff knows who it is, what it is, how it is, why it's about to happen. And yes, I have called the county attorney maybe more than once at, during the period of elections during the day. And, although to this date, I was able to not just get what was wrong fixed, but get the corruption weeded out without anybody having to go to jail, at least not that day. And, they understood very quickly, very clearly that there was not going to be any coloring outside the lines. If somebody had a coil in their hand and they were going up to a voting booth, everything was going to happen between the lines. That was all there's to it. And, what's happening is that if somebody says, well, John, you know, I'd rather not vote and I haven't chosen to vote and I won't vote, that is their prerogative and their choice. While I may disagree with them, and I would stand in the park myself on the top of my soapbox advocating that they go out and vote with the top of my lungs, I respect their right to not vote. And to that end, I'll share all with you that when we do not participate in the judicial system or the electoral system, when we stand by, our chance to make a difference evaporates. One person once said, there is no greater honor than for an individual to do their duty as a jurist, to sit on a jury. While that may or may not, in my mind, be the highest thing, honor that and service that they can give to their country, I'll tell you, it's one of the top three in my mind. And I kid you not, I stand beside that and encourage any of you who get a jury duty summons, please, 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 you're one of the few, not one of the many, but you're one of the few that has the capacity to make the right decision you're one of the few that has capacity to honor someone that may have done it right, but you've been accused of doing it wrong, and honor them with the chance to be vindicated. And likewise, on the opposite side of the coin, for somebody who's colored outside the lines and is trying to get off, you may be the person that helps grant justice to the individuals that he or she has offended, that party has offended, and see that there is some punitive compensation to that individual for the wrong that they've committed. So when it comes to a jury trial, there's no longer just one judge. Now there's 12. The judge is a referee. Some of them have become a legend in their own minds, and I've even seen them try to say, look, juror number 7, you were told that you could not look into this on your own, and you were told you could not look into the law yourself. I told you myself, and juror number 7 in this particular case, and this particular jury was in Nebraska, he said, with all due respect, Your Honor, there are 12 judges here, and you're not one of them. We are the people trying this out of a jury of the peers, and while your suggestions are sincerely appreciated, you are not allowed to tamper with the jury. And to that end, should you do so, I've already talked with my fellow jurors, and we have agreed, and it's already been written up hand signed. It's right here. And because this one person on the jury is a notary, but one of them have been notarized, we have a criminal complaint to have you removed for jury tampering. Talk about balls. Juror number 7 was a 31-year-old female accountant. Okay? And that was in Nebraska. The judge recused himself, and he retired that day, literally. He declared a mistrial. The jury was released, and the subsequent judge. It was interesting. The case actually never went back to trial. The subsequent judge dismissed it on a technicality, and I kid you not, if you hadn't dismissed it on a technicality, there was a whole lot of people, including three prosecutors that were going to go to jail on that one. But when it comes to demanding that an individual show cause and why they're doing something, or if they say, well, I'm sorry, the Supreme Court has recently ruled, and now that ding that you just heard, ding, quote unquote, was us going back to the TV show As the Stomach Turns, and back to Mr. T. And with hold on a second, I'm gonna my throat's dry. Anybody ever notice how dehydrated you get on long airplane flights, especially when they're excessive 7 hours? At the lower partial pressure of oxygen, you get dehydrated real quick. We were speaking with a public pretender for Mr. T. And, we brought up the issue that, it talks about the, at this case, the Fourth Amendment, it says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, effects against unreasonable search and seizure shall not be violated. No warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by an oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. It says no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, which meant that once they have probable cause, they have to still go get a warrant. And this attorney, who's been practicing for 44 years, he and I are, got our law degree about the same time. And what happens is that he said that, well, this is the single biggest point for dismissal of the case because they have no evidence. And when I explain this, he says, well, you know, the Supreme Court ruled 10 or 12 years ago that this, and they know that they are, there's good faith and there's this. And when I started to ask him when the Supreme Court, I was about to ask him when the Supreme Court obtained the authority to override the Constitution, which is what gives them their right. The moment they void the Constitution or question it, then they question all the articles, and which means that they no longer have authority to hear the case. I was about to ask him that, and I realized that there was a wall there, and that no matter what happened, this guy has spent 44 years getting inbred and hypnotized and trained, and like Pavlov's dog, because the judge probably had the authority to find contempt. Maybe he even brought the question up. Maybe he was even the one that raised it. But somebody else brought it up, and there's issues that they say we can override Constitution. And the fact that right now he may be helping do one thing for Mr. Key, that we desperately, or not desperately, because God is in charge. It no matter how you slice it, and we talked about this last time, that there's a higher power out there. And if anybody believes that there is no higher power, that there is no intelligent designer for this sorry, miserable third rock from the sun we call planet Earth out there, during the Q&A period, I'd like to bring up your point. If any of you believe there is not an intelligent designer out there, and sometime maybe what we'll do is we'll schedule an evening, may even schedule an evening to listen to bait and debate, an argument and cussing and discussing about whether there actually is an intelligent designer out there, if that's something that everybody would like to hear. But at this juncture, this gentleman said, this is what the judge is going to say. I've heard him say it before. This is the way he's going to rule. He's going to say that this is frivolous and just summarily dismiss it. And I realized that he was so trained by the establishment, and the fact that evil out there threatens those who do not have the temerity of character or the intestinal fortitude to fight for what is right, that he wanted that washed. He wanted nothing to do with it immediately. And to that end, a lot of the judiciary that's out there is very intimidating. And to that end, when you put something on the record that is a show cause, it's a there was a very recent pleading that we put into Mr. T's case where they have not ruled on it yet, but we demanded that they show cause. And so to that end, that is on the record for at the very least the appeal, but we're going to at this juncture waiting for him to rule on it, and we may have to file a motion for rehearing if he does. We've requested the findings of fact and conclusions of law at law that he published those in his opinion or in his decision, whatever it may be. And so we're going to see what this particular judge does with Mr. T. From what the public pretender stated, he's worked with this judge and in this judge's courtroom for many, many years. And he believes he knows exactly how he's going to rule. And to that end, he's given us a little bit more insight into the bench. And also, one thing about the bench is that his violation of his oath of office. Now, the thing is that submitting a complaint for violation of oath of office. The very people that will be hearing that complaint are his constituents. So that we have to come to a place where we very much need to pay attention to the finite details of that which we complain about, and so that whatever happens, that even somebody that's wrongfully considering ruling against us or ruling on in one direction or the other, that when they look at it and they read it, that they know they're doing wrong, and that there is no ifs, ands, or buts, or candy or nuts in their mind, that they now have something to worry about. Even the ones that are so callous and insensitive that they rule evilly against people in ways that every year I learn about new ways to commit the same old evil. And the thing is that these individuals, by publishing the law and publishing it the way it is and the way they're supposed to be handled with them, they slowly began to realize, and are beginning to realize, how wrong they are. And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when all of this begins to pile up and compile, and they realize how wide and deep it is that and the evil that they're done and they're doing. So that what happens is that we have all of that material on the record to support complaints against them and a complaint for overturning and a motion for overturning a judgment that they may have illegally authored. And so whatever you do, it's extremely, extremely important that you put into writing, into paper, everything that can, could, or should apply to the evil that's being done in a case that you're familiar with, okay, or the case that you may be involved in. And what happens is that he who stands for anything stands for nothing. He who stands for nothing will stand for anything. And so as we begin to go with your complaint or somebody else's, think about how much evil is actually being committed and how much you're willing to put up with before you do something about it. And there, at this juncture, you know, we all, I'm presently reminded of the quote that we all remember. That was that the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. And if somebody says, "Well, John, I don't want to," well, I don't either. I'm a peace-loving guy. I remember that movie Patriot with Mel Gibson. It was kind of interesting that, they portrayed him, Mel Gibson portrayed that individual as wanting peace and quietness, and that's what he was going to do, and until it came to a place where they were taking his liberty away and his children, you know, and that, you know, and that they were paying for it with their lives, you know, it's it raises the question, is that a pay me now or pay me later? Is that a make that refreshing of the tree of liberty an issue now and save a whole bunch of lives and a lot of grief in between? Or is it do it later after we've suffered and taken horrible losses and then make the same or even a greater payment? With that, my time has come to a close. If you choose to participate in the Q&A, if you keep to the subject matter topic, that's wonderful. If you don't, you're not allowed to. We'll also try to serve you best in the Q&A session. It's my honor, once again, it's my honor and privilege to serve at restoring liberty to America beside all of you. Back to you, Martin and Michael.
All right, very good. Well, folks, now is the time for questions and answers. Star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Of course, that's for everybody that's on the call with us. You dialed in a number and you put in a pin. You're on the call with us. Star 2 at this time to raise your hand. For everybody else listening at freedomsradio.com, type your questions in the question bar at this time and click submit. All right, and right off the top, we have Mr. Edward, looks like, has a question. Go ahead, sir.
Well, it's more of a comment or a revelation. I learned something very, very interesting tonight from Brother John. I had thought all along that Texas and Florida were very, very similar with each other. But I learned tonight that we have some broad differences. For instance, John was talking about poll watchers. Here in Florida, you mentioned poll watchers, and you think immediately about strip clubs or gentlemen's clubs. And, you know, that's where the activity is for poll watchers. And now I learned something new.
Thank you, Michael.
In Texas, they got this thing where they vote or something?
Poll watchers are the authority that monitors a specific precinct for election inequities. In the event that election inequities are discovered, then either place an individual under arrest directly under their own authority, or they can endure whatever authority may be present or that they can call in to make such arrest and detain such individual for the accused violation.
Can you imagine if Grassfire Communications had a separate poll watcher channel?
What an interesting concept.
Yeah, in other words, you could have poll watchers communicating across the country instantly, like doing Instagram, or not Instagram, but doing, it's now called X, what is it, Twitter. Like having a Twitter account where they're just talking instantly, notifying people about what's going on in the voting precinct that they're monitoring.
Well, in Texas, it's illegal to have a communication device inside within the 100-foot perimeter and within the voting area.
Oh. Anyways, just sharing.
Yeah, the only exception to that rule is when a poll watcher calls a county attorney or when the precinct chairman or precinct judge calls election headquarters. Otherwise, it's a criminal act. But interesting concept, nonetheless. You still there, Michael?
Yeah, I just stopped. I put my hand back down.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry,
well,
were you off? was that it for you, Mr. Edward?
Martin, do you have any other hands up there?
All right. Well, I was making sure that Mr. Edward was completed there, but yep.
All done.
All right. No, I'm not seeing anything as of yet.
Well, I have not had any sleep for a couple of days. If we
refresh your screen, Martin.
Yes, I'm attempting to do that now. All right, and so let's go ahead I heard you on that, Brother John. We'll try to get you taken care of quickly. Real quick, Mr. Michael in Nevada, go ahead, sir. You've been unmuted.
Thank you. How's everybody this evening?
Better than I deserve, Michael, but that's just me.
Well, I'd like to thank you, John. I was in the seventh grade, and that was the last year we ever had any kind of discussion on constitutional law or anything. And I reflect back to that, and there's a reason for it. They don't want you to know anything. They don't want you to know the ABCs, 1099A, 1045B, you know, whatever number they want to put on it. It's amazing. And I look at it today, and it's like I can't stand to turn the TV on because of the indoctrination. That's what I tell most people. They've been indoctrinated.
Don't feel
anyway,
bad,
I just
Michael.
Wanted to share that with
I have,
you.
We so, haven't, in this household, we haven't watched paid programming since November of 1977.
Congratulations.
So I guess you could say you and I may have one or two things in common.
the people, is all these judges that get removed and leave the country or never come back or wherever they go, prosecutors and the lawyers, and sort of like Judge Roy Bean, they'd put a warrant out for somebody, dead or alive, and they'd bring them to Judge Roy Bean. So we just find out this information and put these people on wanted posters. You violated that. Watch out for them. You know, post them as criminals. You know, sort of like what they do for DUI drivers and perverts and whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just a thought.
Yeah. It is a good thought. And you know what? Someday maybe we'll have somebody that has enough of a budget that they can begin putting up wanted posters internationally for individuals that and have enough that there's enough compensation that people will feel like they can stand up against what potentially is threatening, and because the compensation is enough for them to either defend themselves or et cetera, get themselves good counsel, you know. Or maybe a nice island in the Bahamas. Thank you, Michael, for your comments and your thoughts.
You're welcome.
Do you have anything else you wanted to share?
Oh, that's it for tonight. I'm just flashing
back. Thank you very much.
Between seventh grade and now.
Yep. I remember as well. With that, thank you, and back to you, Martin.
Yes, and real quick here, Jennifer in New York, did you have a question?
Just a quickie. Glad you are back, John, and thanks for tonight. And I just have a question. What are you allowed to talk about what comes next after I filed the entry of appearance?
Yep, and the entry of appearance, and in your entry of appearance, you also demanded a show cause, didn't you? You know, when you made that joint entry of appearance, and for those of you who are not familiar with what Jennifer is doing, she filed an entry of appearance for, and an entry of appearance is normally a document that you use when you're a bar attorney showing up to represent somebody else. And what happens is that you have that attorney basically is appearing for you, and they make the decisions for you. You've actually legally subjugated yourself to that attorney, and you've surrendered or abdicated all of your rights to make decisions apart from the final decision. Or the final pleading or acceptance of the plea, so that how your defense is handled is all being handled by them. Well, Jennifer made a very interesting entry of appearance. She made an entry of appearance as requesting an individual for counsel as a co-counsel and for guidance, not to represent her, and which is the way an American national would ask for, because they themselves are they're sui juris. They're in complete control of all their faculties, including their mental faculties, and they are entitled to represent themselves. And what happens is that so she asked the judge to recognize the entry of appearance, and if the judge or someone else did not or would not or could not accept the entry of appearance, she demanded that they show cause why and where and how their right to subvert or override the Constitution, when and where and how they got it, and that they show exactly how they were able to, and she demanded that, and she's demanding that they show cause why they have the right to override her Sixth Amendment right to choose counsel. And so, Jennifer, when did you submit that? Just this last week or 2 weeks ago?
October 10. Today's October 17.
So literally a week ago today. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So the judge really hasn't had time to review that. But what Jennifer did was she asked for our help and some education, and we shared with her the law and the Constitution and everything else, and we assisted her in preparing that motion. And so we're gonna wait and see what happens here shortly. There's at this juncture, we're waiting to see if the judge recuses himself and moves to an non-extradition country. But she was very kind about in her motion. She was very respectful, and she was not antagonistic or unkind in any way, shape, or form. And but what happened is that she just flat out demanded, "Hey, look, this is my right under the Sixth Amendment." And if somebody has grief with that or heartburn with that, let's let them show cause. And she's probably one of the most recent students on show cause and we're waiting to see what the judge says. And in her show cause demand, she also demanded that they provide findings of fact and conclusions of law, so that if they've done something wrong and they're going to do something wrong, that they provide, we're letting them provide the evidence against themselves, so that when they rule against her, the finding in facts and conclusions of law that they use will be the evidence will be provided by them, we're not going to. And Jennifer's already prepared to not accept their ruling if they don't provide findings of fact or conclusions of law, and if they don't, then there will be a motion or a demand for findings of fact and conclusions of law if they don't rule in her favor. And we're already helping her prepare that demand, in the case that she's got going, there are some other things that the judge has ruled illegally and unlawfully, that other individuals a debt collector is not required to prove up the debt. So at this juncture, it's going to be an interesting situation. We almost should add Jennifer to the saga as the stomach turns based on how much fun she's having right now. And actually, you know what? We're going to start covering your case with your permission, Jennifer, under as the stomach turns. Is that okay?
Yes, sure. Everyone.
Okay. Because there's a lot happening, preparing to happen, that is very exciting and it's very enlightening for everyone that's with us. And one thing is that when the evil that's occurring out there is occurring, if we can find out what's happening as it's transpiring, so that we can see the evil that and the new ways and forms that the evil's coming out, that we can work together to learn how to work with that and resolve the ignorance that binds those to the evil, so that once the ignorance is gone, they you can see them slap their chin and say, "Wow, we were way wrong on that. We've got to change now." You know, and that's, see, the thing is that if we can make it so that they slap their own chins and say, "Wow, this is wrong. We've got to correct this." You know, and see, usually what happens is that these individuals, they're making judgments without findings of fact or conclusions of law. They're just on their own opinion. And many of them are starting to do so illegally and unkindly, to a lot of damage, to the litigations in front of them. And to that end, if we can start to, get them to, find facts and conclusions of law, then what happens is that that's the thought-provoking moment that they'll all of a sudden realize that, wait a minute, when they're required to find why they're doing something, what happens is that and they realize that it is illegal what they're doing and unconstitutional. Then what will happen is that they'll either continue to do it with malice and intent and carnal knowledge of their bad behavior, or they'll stop and they'll turn around. And what happens is that once they stop and turn around, and this is where the penny really drops. We had one student that unbelievable. Multiple felonies was charged with over something that should have never, ever, ever occurred. And pretense of inventorying a vehicle during an arrest, came up with a whole bunch of felony charges and everything else, which weren't really felony charges, but this individual. Coincidentally, Michael, he lives in Nevada too. Well, or he does now. He used to live in Oregon. But, the charges were in Nevada. That student wrote a very, very nice letter explaining everything A, B, C. And at the end, he was very kind about it. A very nice motion. And, it was a motion / letter because he hadn't even been arraigned yet. So there wasn't the usual court style and everything to respond to, but wrote the letter to the judge and the prosecutor together. And Michael, was it 3 weeks or 4 weeks before the arraignment? He got a letter or check? No, he got a check in the mail for the full amount of bail. And nobody lets loose of those kind of nickels with a whole number that far with that many zeros between it and then to the left of the decimal place. Nobody does. But what happened was, and this part's exciting, but it is not the frosting on the cake. But this, in the interest of justice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we're dismissing this case. You know, but the letter he wrote, he was willing to nose to the grindstone, work hard, study, and the letter that he wrote that got dismissed. But here is something else. I have family that may live in Nevada. I have family that may work in the legal system in Nevada. In fact, I have family that are attorneys in Nevada. I have family that work in the sheriff's, Clark County Sheriff's Department there. There was a memo handed down 4 months ago, and it was directly because of this student's case that they were recommending that officers do not even attempt or consider detaining them. And then there was a memo, apparently just a month ago. I was out for my father's funeral 2 weeks ago, and his funeral was a week and 6 days ago. But when I was out at the funeral, it was shared with me that there was another letter that had come out about another something that they were recommending as a memo that they do not detain or even arrest or cite individuals for a handful of things. And it was all about this particular stop. And one nephew was aware. He is, because he may have looked into some things for us with this student, but he said, Uncle John, he says, I know what's going on, and this is all about that stop that you had me look into. And so, without anybody else knowing what's going on, this student wrote a letter in sheer pleasance of kind milk of human kindness letter that pointed out the evil and the wrong, and it is, and I don't remember how long ago, how many months or years that student's case was anymore, but it is having effect recently for the good, and this is where people like Jennifer Sue and others. And that preciousness and that blood and that kindness that they're pouring into making their pleadings the best they can. This is the best we could hope for. Oh, you know, could we have sued them for wrongful arrest and detention and possibly under a 18 USC 242 gotten felony charges against the officers and maybe even under 42 USC 1983 gotten a judgment against them? Oh yeah. Did we? No way. This one, the student agreed to forego damages. The student was understood the gravity of the fact that this prosecutor, who had multiple grand jury indictments, and this prosecutor, he was the one that went before the grand jury and got the indictments. It wasn't a package that he handed to another prosecutor. It was one that he went and got himself. He turned everything over because of this one student's pleadings, okay? And so helping make a difference for everybody, for the good, for the long haul, oh, we may not make quite the income, you know, that we would like to or we could, but is it the right thing to do it this way? I think it is. Some of the others, if they're going to be painfully obtuse and resistive and unkind, okay, let's send a 42 USC 1983 civil complaint for damages with punitive and compensatory damages, and let's pay for the new beach house in Miami Beach or Biscayne Bay. Jennifer? Well, you're a million bucks. Pardon?
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm not asking them to do anything that they don't require of us. So why should they not do what they want require us to do. Like, it's like I said to the judge, they wouldn't accept a bank notarized document because they didn't think the signature was correct. And my daughter sends letters every day out because they won't accept anything but a wet signature on an agreement, on a contract. And yet you can show me a piece of paper without my name, without a date, without a signature, and say that's okay for the bank to do. And it's just not. It's not right.
Right. Right. You are so correct, Jennifer.
But he said, that's a trust, or a mortgage, so that's different. It's like, no, it's a contract.
Still a contract. You are
yep.
So correct, Jennifer. Okay, did you have anything else, Jennifer? And by the
no.
way, now that I'm back in pocket, it's going to be a day or two, while I'm getting myself settled here. It's going to be a day or two before I get myself completely, all my druthers about me. Let's plan on next week, you and I having a conference call, okay?
Certainly. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Martin, back to you, sir.
Yes, sir. All right, one last go around here. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question, or type it in on the Freedoms Radio side. Let me get a refresh here. All right. I believe this might take care of us.
Well, then in closing, for all of you, there is no accidents in this universe. Everything has a purpose. I may not know all the purposes. You may not. We may not know them after we stand in glory. But I'll tell you this, especially Martin, you, and Michael, you, and everyone else out there, it is truly an honor and a privilege to stand and serve the task of restoring liberty besides all of you. Thank you. And back to you, Martin, and about, I guess you're, you got a note about Schlevins.
Yeah. All right. So join us again tomorrow night, same time, same place. We'll be having our normal Wednesday night call with Harris Levin speaking about LLCs. And then we'll be back again Thursday night for our normal call, pre-recorded calls on home foreclosure remedies. And then back again on Friday for a religious call, and then Saturday again with Jeff Shears with Charitable Religious Trust and the like. So until next time, everyone have a pleasant evening and be well.
The conference is now complete. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.